and a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We will be joined by Congressman David Rauser coming up here in just a little bit, an interesting article that he's got up over at Breitbart.com about a growing concern across the nation of illegals getting commercial driver's licenses from states like California and New York, allowing individuals who cannot speak or read English to drive 1,000-pound 18-wheelers trucks all across the country. It's been a major problem over the last couple of months. We'll get into some details with him coming up here in just a little bit. However, we do continue this morning with the Schumer shutdown, 29 days. The official clock, 28 days, 7 hours, 3 minutes, 43 seconds this morning, as the pressure continues to grow against the Democrats to reopen the federal government. And this is not just some, you know, crazy right-wing talking point. Democrats are now getting pressure from unions. They are getting pressure from individuals within their own party. The American voter, the public perception of this shutdown, this has... Yeah, you know, unless something dramatic happens in the next couple of days, this will end up being an event that backfires majorly on the Democrats. From the beginning of this shutdown back on October the 1st, we talked about and have continued to talk about in great detail how this is an issue that traditionally, like a shutdown, has been an issue that Democrats traditionally have performed very well on. They've been able to use their allies in the media, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, CBS, NBC, ABC, the gambit, the litany of media outlets that they have deep, deep ties to. They have been successful in, no matter who is actually responsible, what party is or is not doing the right thing, they have always been able to control the messaging. And this shutdown has been very different. First of all, you've got Donald Trump in the Oval Office, who, unlike other Republicans, probably at this point would have already caved and cowered to the Democrats' demands. That has not happened, and while the president wraps up his trip over in Asia tomorrow, it seemingly isn't going to happen. I mean, I've not seen any public commentary. You've not seen any cracks in the facade of the president and Senate and House of Republicans. There's no indications that Republicans are going to cave or fold on this. And as we've talked about, there really is nothing for them to cave and fold on. The continuing resolution passed by the Senate back in the House, rather, back in mid-September, the one that came forth to the United States Senate in late September, right before the October the 1st shutdown, is a true clean CR. Now, Democrats want to argue that Republicans are hacking and slashing the government. Folks, that happened back in July. You lost the battle on the One Big Beautiful Bill. Donald Trump and Republicans who control the House and the Senate were successful in passing what I think you could accurately describe as their cornerstone legislation back in the month of June and signed into law in July. That ship has sailed. It is said and done. You've already lost that issue. Now, I appreciate and understand the fight. I understand that Democrats want to rehash and relitigate this issue because they don't like the cuts to USAID. They don't like the cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds NPR and PBS. They don't like that stuff, and that's fine. I get it. That you don't have to like that stuff. But the reality is, you, as Democrats, do not have the votes. You do not have the contingent. You do not have the ground support. The math is not there. It is not mathing when it relates to this. So Republicans passed through their cornerstone legislation and agenda back in July. It's said and done. What is happening right now is a clean continuing resolution. And I'll ask Congressman David Rauser about this coming up. We'll talk about the deadline because it's only supposed to go until November the 21st. So we'll see what happens there. But this CR is nothing more than keeping the government funded at the level that it has been in the past. And so Democrats can try and turn this into a healthcare debate. They can try and turn this into a USAID debate or a Corporation for Public Broadcasting debate. They can try doing all of that, but there's no evidence to point to it. And that, I think, is really what has screwed them in this entire thing, right? There's nothing to point at in the CR and demagogue. There's nothing to point at in the CR and yell that the sky is falling because none of it exists. And I've mentioned this before. I don't know who's responsible for this. I don't know if it's Trump's team. I don't know if it's Thune's team or Johnson's team or some combination of all three that came up with this idea of not jam-packing this CR with a bunch of policy priorities. That has turned out to be an incredibly smart move on behalf of whoever was responsible for it, because it gives the left absolutely zero, and I mean zero, leverage in this shutdown. And I've got a clip coming up in a little bit from CNN yesterday, two different CNN clips. Jake Tapper just completely pushing back on Democrats' notions that this debate is about healthcare when it's not. Those subsidies that Democrats passed in 2021 are not in this legislation. If Democrats were so freaking concerned about the subsidies, they should have made them permanent in 2021, but they didn't. And so here you go. Another poor decision by the left has led them into this position right now. So the pressure's growing. I mean, here's an article. Here's the headline over at Politico. Democrats face moment of truth as shutdown coalition frays. I mean, this is not a great headline for those on the political left over at Politico. It's just not. And it reads, this was published or updated yesterday morning with some new information. Democrats grappled Monday with the first major fraying of their coalition amid the government shutdown, with a federal employee union calling for them to stand down 4 weeks into the standoff. There was no immediate surrender from party leaders, but the union's plea forced many Democrat lawmakers into a defensive crouch. Their number two Senate leader said it would be the subject of internal conversations this week, with bipartisan talks all but ground to a halt. And it makes sense that there's no bipartisan talks going on. There's nothing to discuss. Pass the CR, the government reopens, and then you can relitigate healthcare, you can relitigate USAID, you can relitigate the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can do all that stuff, but you're going to have to open the government first. And the president has said just as much. He has made this point abundantly clear to Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. And I find this to be shocking. The president has even said himself he is willing to discuss healthcare. He is willing to discuss some of these subsidies. And I think there's a good reason for it. Not that I'm in favor of ACA subsidies, but there's a lot of people that take advantage of those. President Donald Trump can read the tea leaves. I'm not saying that he is going to completely lose the battle on this thing, but I'm sure he's actually interested in having a legitimate discussion. He has told Jeffries and Schumer just that. But even with that information public, it's still not enough for them to just reopen the freaking government. According to Senator Dick Durbin, the Democrat from Illinois, he told reporters on Monday that, quote, referring to this quote from this union, it has a lot of impact. They've been our friends, adding that Democrats take them seriously. The push by the American Federation of Government Employees for Congress to immediately pass a clean stopgap funding bill, which has been offered by Republicans, is among a laundry list of pressure points that are bearing down on lawmakers. And it's very interesting when you look at this group, this American Federation of Government Employees. This is a union, and as I think it is a fair assessment to make, unions, for the most part, the vast majority of them not only tend to lean left, but tend to be in the pocket of the Democrat Party. I mean, that is just the case with the vast majority of unions. Look at it, pretty every single teachers union across the country. I mean, it's just the case. They are just puppets, talking pieces for the political left. So when you've got this union, which represents some 800,000 federal employees, begging the Democrats to reopen the government, that's a major problem. That is a, to me, a very strong indication that you have screwed something up. You don't typically see this fraying. You don't typically see this fracturing, but it's happening. And to me, it's no surprise. By the end of the week, members of the military will miss their next paycheck. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, used to be known as food stamps, will also run out as Americans who get health insurance through the Affordable Care Act exchange will confront premium spikes as open enrollment starts without a deal on how to extend soon-to-expire subsidies. The ramifications of the shutdown on air travels have also continued to escalate. Senator Mark Warner of federal worker heavy Virginia has been firmly in favor of confronting President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans over expiring ACA subsidies and health care. But the Democrats struck a more cautious note on Monday, with Warner saying, quote, look, I think we can still deal with health care and SNAP, but I know the shutdown is a real challenge. Federal employees feel like they've been abused and also going for weeks now without pay. So the fracturing is beginning. And I'm not going to call it infighting because it's really not infighting, but you've already got some defectors within the Democrat Party. Now, they haven't voted yet. There was another vote yesterday, the 13th. To reopen the federal government. Once again, that failed, only receiving 54 votes, six shy of the 60-vote filibuster threshold in the United States Senate. So nobody has jumped ship yet, but all indications, all evidence that is available would indicate that that is going to happen sooner rather than later, and literally could happen over the next couple of days, because this SNAP issue is becoming a big problem for the Democrats. SNAP, which provides individuals with either free or heavily subsidized food assistance, it's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is something that Democrats do not want to see go by the wayside. And so you've got this SNAP program, which here in North Carolina is a major program. According to details out of the state, more than 1.4 million North Carolinians rely on SNAP benefits, including more than 580,000 children, working families, older adults, veterans, and people with disabilities. More than 80% of those who receive benefits are working, with SNAP providing between $230 and $250 million worth of food benefits to over 600,000 households across the state of North Carolina. So this is a major pressure point now for the Democrats. And again, for Republicans, as I saw yesterday, I think it was in Massachusetts. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. In Massachusetts, they are they've got a website on one of their it's their DHS website or something else that is calling out the Republicans for having the government closed. You've got this this is a screenshot from a couple of different websites here. You've got a Maryland, Massachusetts, California, and Illinois. And when you look at the mass.gov, note, President Trump is currently choosing not to issue November SNAP benefits that help you and many families put food on the table. You may also have benefits cut starting in November because of changes congressional Republicans and President Trump enacted in the One Big Beautiful Bill. In Maryland, the Trump administration shut down the federal government on October the 1st. I mean, it's complete revisionist history. Complete revisionist history from Democrats. And they, again, have no answers. They have no solution to the problem. So they are now trying to pin, which they've been trying to do, I'll give them that, for the last 29 days now, trying to pin this shutdown on Trump and the Republicans, but the American people aren't biting. And even the media is not biting on this issue. Here is last night or yesterday. Yeah, last night on CNN, you've got Jake Tapper on with Representative Marlene Stanberry, who is a Democrat out of, I believe she's out of New Mexico. And this is the back and forth between Tapper and her. Again, this is CNN. This is not a right wing entity. This is not a conservative media. This is Jake Tapper. We all know his backstory. We all know his history. We know what he did during the Biden administration. Here's Tapper on CNN yesterday. Again, don't take my word for it.
Should the Democratic senators from New Mexico, your home state, vote to open the government so that these SNAP funds are not at risk?
Let me be clear. The administration is choosing to starve American children with money that they already have appropriated.
I'm not applauding
their
tactics.
By the White House. Well, this is a choice by the White House.
This is also, Congresswoman, this is also a choice by Senate Democrats to
not
vote to open the government. Yes, it is. I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want Medicaid funds restored. They're doing it because they want Obamacare premiums to be extended past the end of the year. I understand the reasoning.
Sir, let me just be clear. The money for contingency plans is sitting there. That is why the states are suing. The White House is withholding funds from
children. 2 to 3 weeks worth of SNAP funds. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it may not be a big deal to you, but let me tell you that for the grandparents, for grandparents that literally are feeding their children,
my point is that it's a short-term solution.
In those accounts,
it's a short-term.
At the end of the day, people need to be able to feed their families, and Saturday is when those funds run out.
If you feel so strongly, Congresswoman, why not ask the Senate Democrats from New Mexico to vote to open the government so that the SNAP funds...
Sir, I am here in the House of Representatives. It is shut down. I am fighting to get the government reopened. I am fighting to get funding put back into SNAP that is already existent, and I am fighting for the American people. I am here. But show me a single Republican that is here. Not a single one is here to make sure that Americans are fed on Saturday. That is why I am here.
Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry from New Mexico.
That's great, isn't it? I mean, so when you've got Jake Tapper, who we know is not a friend of the right, when you've got Jake Tapper, who now is willingly and knowingly lied about the Biden administration, wrote a freaking book about it, who got lambasted by folks on both sides of the political aisle over knowing damn well that Joe Biden had mental acuity issues. He completely ignored it as he was hosting his show on CNN for the better part of 3 years. Then, of course, the day that Joe Biden's out of the Oval Office, writes this book and likely profits millions of dollars over this book. When he is challenging Democrats on Capitol Hill, which this clip is from last night, it shows you that the messaging is not working. And the point that Jake Tapper is bringing up is not one that's radical, crazy, or out of control. He's not puppeting right-wing talking points. He's asking a simple question. If Democrats are so freaking concerned about SNAP, if Democrats are so concerned about federal employees not getting a paycheck, if they're so concerned about TSA, if they're so concerned about flight controllers, if that's all the case, then just open the government. Now, you guys have the choice to do that. Again, there's nothing for Republicans to cave on. There's no wish list. There's no items. There's nothing. It's a clean CR. The government will open up the same way that it was prior to October the 1st. So there's nothing to cave on for the right. And when you've got Jake Tapper asking these very simple questions and Democrats just going around in this circle over, oh, ACA subsidies and healthcare and restoring this, there's no messaging. They're completely losing the battle. So here in North Carolina, Democrat Attorney General Jeff Jackson, instead of encouraging Senate Democrats from across the United States to reopen the federal government, what is he doing? He is joining 24 other states and the District of Columbia in filing a lawsuit against USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, over SNAP benefits. Don't you just love this? I mean, if this is not the most picture-perfect example of what's wrong with the modern Democrat Party. They shut down the government because they want to relitigate the One Big Beautiful Bill back from July. Because they have shut down the federal government, SNAP benefits are going to stop starting Saturday, November the 1st. And instead of finding a solution to the problem, you've got Democrats like Jeff Jackson who are deciding, oh, I've got a solution to the problem here. Let's sue the federal government. Let's sue USDA. Let's sue the entity that is responsible for doling out SNAP benefits. I mean, it's completely illogical. If you're so worried about SNAP benefits, Attorney General Jeff Jackson, call Democrat senators from across the country and tell them to reopen the government. I mean, this is just the most insane thing in the world. He held a press conference yesterday in Raleigh talking about the same said issue. Let's listen into a few minutes of AG Jeff Jackson. Here's him in Raleigh yesterday.
Let me tell you why we're here today. We are here because a few days ago, we got a letter from the Department of Agriculture telling us that as of November 1st, they would stop funding for the SNAP program. The SNAP program is the biggest way that we get food to people who cannot afford it in our state and in our country. This would have an enormous impact on our state. They said, the department said, that the reason they're not going to be funding this program anymore as of November 1st is because of the government shutdown and a lack of funds. This is not true. The truth is, the department has the money. Congress gave them a $6 billion emergency fund to use in situations like this. The truth is, the department is choosing not to use the emergency money that they've been given. I believe the reason they're doing that is to play shutdown politics. They are looking to ratchet up the pain in an already very painful moment. This is wrong, and it's against the law. If Congress gives a department money to fund a program, that department cannot refuse to fund that program. That would be the department effectively overriding Congress, and courts have been very clear that they're not allowed to do that, which is why, as of today, we are taking the department to court. I think we have a very strong argument, and we have a strong coalition making that argument. Let's talk about what the consequences for our state would be. 1.4 million North Carolinians rely on SNAP for food. That includes 600,000 children, 40,000 babies. The number one county in terms of per capita recipient for SNAP right now is McDowell. We all know what happened to McDowell this time last year with respect to Helene. Almost half of the recipients of SNAP benefits are children. One in four kids need SNAP to have enough to eat. The consequences would be devastating.
Well, and again, to Attorney General Jeff Jackson, if the consequences are going to be so devastating, then instead of filing a frivolous lawsuit against USDA, why don't you just reopen the government? And I know Jeff Jackson himself can't personally do that. He's not an elected member of the U.S. Senate. But, you know, he's talking about how, oh, he's so happy to sign on to this lawsuit and we've got all this strength and power behind us. Why doesn't that same coalition write a letter to Senate Democrats and encourage them to reopen the government? I can tell you why the USDA is not using some of those emergency funds for SNAP, because it's for an emergency. This isn't an emergency. This is not a natural disaster. This is not an event that Mother Nature created that we have no control over. This is man-made by the Democrats because they lost in November of last year. Let's be perfectly clear about why this shutdown is taking place. Democrats put forth a terrible presidential candidate in 2024. That terrible presidential candidate dragged down the entire Democrat ballot, costing them to lose control of the Senate, lose the Oval Office, and Republicans to retain their majority in the House. That is why we are here right now. That is why the government has been shut down for the last 29 days. Plain and simple. They lost in November, and they still have not come to terms with it. Folks, the reality is very simple. When you win an election and you are the party in charge, you are expected to govern and lead based on your ideals. And that is exactly what we have seen from Trump and the GOP. They have led. They have governed, as tens of millions of American voters have asked them to do so. Plain and simple. you're in the minority if you're a Democrat and you don't get to govern. And I know that sucks. Republicans have been there. We were there just a couple of years ago. I get that it sucks, but that's the reality of politics. You win an election, you govern. You lose an election, you're in the minority. You don't really have a hell of a lot of bargaining power. I mean, that's just the way that it works. You don't have to like it. It sucks when you're on the losing side. I get it. I've been there. We've all been there. Both sides have been. But that's the reality of this situation. There is a simple solution to said problem if Democrats are so concerned. They refuse to move on that, at least right now. However, I am a strong believer that this is likely to change pretty soon. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer met Monday evening with his leadership circle, including Senator Dick Durbin. The entire Senate Democrat caucus met for a closed-door lunch yesterday afternoon. During a floor speech on Monday, Schumer didn't directly address the union's new position, with the AFGE National President Everett Kelly saying, quote, "It's time to pass a clean continuing resolution and end the shutdown today." Instead, Schumer noted that the cascading consequences of the shutdown and laid the responsibility for ending it on Trump and the Republicans, saying that the president, quote, "skipped town for his second foreign trip in a month." Ain't that great? Yeah, foreign trip. Let's see. His first foreign trip was going over to the Middle East to sign a peace deal between the Iranian-backed terror group known as Hamas, which operates in Gaza, and Israel. Sure as hell sounds like a vacation to me. And over the last couple of days, he has been in Asia nailing down trade deals with Asian nations. He's meeting the president of China, I believe, today or tomorrow. But, you know, just gallivanting across the globe. Again, you talk about losing the messaging. The president, quote, "skipped town for his second foreign trip." Yeah, sounds like a paradise vacation. I'm sure the president's kicking up his feet at a luxury resort somewhere in Japan, sipping on some pina coladas by the pool. I mean, that seems like that's what's going on, right? That's what's happening right now. In a subsequent statement, he said, quote, "Democrats want all federal workers to get their full paychecks and to address the health care crisis. We can do both." House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters in Chicago that Democrats aren't budging, saying, quote, "We need to find a bipartisan agreement that reopens the government immediately. We're going to continue to stand by hardworking federal employees, and our position has not changed over the last several weeks." But among the rank and file, there are growing signs of bipartisan frustration about the stalemate, with a few signs of movement in Capitol Hill for weeks. Senator Lisa Murkowski, the Republican from Alaska, in a floor speech on Monday, called for the Senate to abandon its typical four-day work week and gavel in Friday, joking with reporters afterwards that she went rogue. She said, quote, "I don't think we should be going home and just behaving as if this was another week in the United States Senate. Not when we have a government shutdown. There is so much that is coming to us like a freight train." Senate Majority Leader John Thune and Speaker Mike Johnson pointed to a looming deadline on Monday and said that it is ominous on Democrats to continue down this path. So this is the situation that we're in right now. And from a purely political standpoint, Democrats are losing the issue. Here is CNN yesterday afternoon with some new political polling on the issue.
It hasn't. If anything, it's been helped a little bit. Take a look here, the shift in net popularity versus pre-shutdown. Among the when we're looking at the Republican Party overall, that brand actually up 2 points. That's within the margin of error, but clearly it hasn't dropped. Come over to this side of the screen. Look at the net approval ratings for Republicans in Congress. It's actually up 5 points since pre-shutdown. So what we're seeing here is the Republican brand in Congress has actually improved somewhat compared to where we were pre-shutdown, despite the fact that Republicans control. And that's the math that John Thune and Mike Johnson are looking at is, well, hey, why should we give an electorally speaking when our brand has actually improved a little bit?
Now, we say their position is getting better. With whom? Yeah, okay, with whom? So I think it's two groups that it's so important to keep an eye on. All right, changing the Republican Congress's net approval rating versus pre-shutdown. It's rallying the base for sure. Look at this, the net approval rating up 12 points versus pre-shutdown. But it's not just with the base. It's also with the middle of the electorate. Look at this, among independents. It's up 8 points as well. So we've got a situation here where Republicans with the shutdown are actually rallying their base, but it's also something that's not hurting them with the folks in the middle. If anything, it's helping them with folks in the middle. And this is the type of math that if you're Republicans, you like to see, right? Because something could rally the base but alienate those in the middle, or something could rally those in the middle but alienate the base. But the truth is, we're not seeing that. What we're seeing is the Republican brand has actually gotten better among independents, and it's also gotten better among Republicans as well, that Republican brand when it comes to those in Congress. So again, what's the electoral reason that Republicans would give in at this point?
And what a disaster. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. What a political disaster for Democrats. Once again, it is of their own making. Nobody forced them to do this. Nobody forced them down this road. Nobody held a gun to anybody's head and said, you got to shut down the government for 29 days. They chose to do so because they lost in November of last year. They are in the minority, and it is blowing up in their face. The messaging is not sticking. They're getting questioned now by their own friendly media apparatuses, like whether it's CNN or MSNBC. They are not gaining any sort of support with the American voter. I mean, you look at that polling from CNN, an 8-point approval jump amongst independents. That's a disaster for the Democrats. And we telegraphed this before it happened. There was not going to be a way for them to come out of this thing smelling rosy. It just wasn't going to happen. Yet, here we are. And seemingly nothing is going to change with this, at least from the leadership perspective. But I would suspect over the next 2 or 3 days, I mean, we're Wednesday right now, this snap delay is supposed to start on Saturday when folks' EBT cards won't get refilled. Once that starts, and it is going to start on Saturday, unless something crazy happens with this lawsuit, you will start seeing slowly Democrats peeling off from their party. They don't have a choice. I mean, they don't have the political capital. They don't have the political will. They don't have the favor of the media, and they don't have the favor of the voters. And there's just nothing. There is no wind blowing in their direction right now. Zero. And with this federal government union, which represents 800,000 federal employees, saying, guys, get back to reality, reopen the freaking government. I mean, it's just nothing is working in their favor. Nothing at all. We'll chat with Congressman David Rauser about this shutdown. We'll see what he's hearing out of Washington, D.C. He'll join us coming up here in just a couple of minutes. I do want, of course, remind you that The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We'll hear a quick word from Richard Collier. He is a candidate for Wilmington City Council as early voting does continue this week ahead of Election Day coming up next Tuesday. We'll hear from him, grab a quick break, and catch up with Congressman David Rauser coming up after this as The Nick Craig Show rolls on a Thursday morning live at YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.
A great place to live. Wilmington's growing, and it's easy to see why. It's a great place to live, work, and raise a family.
But growth brings real challenges. It's traffic, stressed infrastructure, and overdevelopment.
I'm Richard Collier. I've spent 30 years solving complex infrastructure problems. And now, I'm ready to put that experience to work.
Richard Collier for City Council. Smart, responsible leadership for Wilmington.
There's been a growing concern over the last 6 months or so about individuals illegally getting CDLs, commercial driver's licenses, across the United States. A new op-ed recently ran over at Breitbart. The headline there, "It's Time for Congress to Protect American Roads from Foreign Truckers." The author of that also happens to be our congressman across the 7th Congressional District here in the state of North Carolina. David Rauser joins us on The Nick Craig Show this morning. Congressman Rauser, Tell us a little bit about this piece that you penned over at Breitbart last week.
Well, you wouldn't think we would even need to do this. And it's quite appalling that we have so many drivers on the road that are here illegally that have no business being behind the wheel. I really applaud the Trump administration, the president, and Secretary Duffy, of course. They recognized this threat. And of course, unfortunately, one of the ways we know it's a threat is you've had these catastrophes on the interstates and on the highways where these drivers who are here illegally have gone to blue states such as California, gotten a commercial driver's license. And when in any other state, if you're utilizing the correct protocols, there's no way they would even been allowed in the door. And so this rule that the administration put into place cracks down on that. And this legislation that I've introduced, along with a number of co-sponsors, this legislation takes that rule and makes it permanent law, which puts even more force behind what the administration is trying to do in terms of cleaning up our roadways.
Congressman Rouser, it'd be one thing if these individuals were driving regular pedestrian vehicles, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about 18-wheelers, big rigs roaming the streets of the United States. In your article, you talk about that horrific situation that unfolded in Florida earlier this year with an illegal U-turn that killed three people. Why is this happening in blue states like California and New York? I mean, what are they thinking?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so I can't get in the minds of those who come up with these crazy policies, particularly in the blue states and the far left states. But it's a pattern. You know, a lot of these blue states have sanctuary cities, California in particular, and they tend to work harder to preserve what, in their view, are the rights of these illegal immigrants more so than their own citizens and the safety of their citizens. And so it's not just an issue as far as commercial driver's license and the issuance of those to illegals, but all the other benefits that they accrue from the taxpayer as well. And so, you know, the country doesn't mind immigration at all, but you want to have an orderly, systematic flow. Where you know who's here, you know why they're here, and you know that they're here for a legitimate and good purpose, not just crossing the border illegally, and then they go and get a commercial driver's license, and they can't speak English. And usually if you can't speak English, you probably can't read English either. And you can see how that's a terrible recipe for disaster on America's highways.
Yeah, and it's obviously creating a concern for folks across the United States. As in your article, you mentioned there's been 12 deaths just this year thus far at the hands of individuals with these CDLs. One of the situations out of New York just a couple of weeks ago was flowing around social media. You had a CDL that was issued to somebody. The first name was listed as no. The last name was issued as name. I mean, so they're not even attempting, Congressman Rouser, at this point to issue this to legitimate people.
And I pointed that out in the op-ed as well. And some of the cases, there's no name at all. There's not even no, and there's not even name. There's no name, period. And so anyhow, it really is egregious and quite frankly, unfathomable that this is happening, you know, in our country. But it gives you a stronger glimpse of the mindset of these very liberal states. And what they're willing to do that is actually causing citizens harm. You know, look at their outrage over ICE, Immigration Customs and Enforcement, you know, agents, and that are simply trying to enforce federal law and protect federal property and, you know, go after the bad guys. Well, you know, you would think if you just took these liberal states at their word, you know, they treat ICE as the bad guy when ICE is just, in fact, those personnel, they're working hard every day and night to keep the American people safe. That's their job. That's their responsibility under the laws that we have. And laws, by the way, that were put in place by Democrats and Republicans. You know, over a course of many years to safeguard the public. So, you know, these blue states are really problematic. They're the main source of these CDLs that should not be given out.
You talk about some of the work that Secretary Duffy and the Trump administration is doing, and you back that up with introducing some legislation. Tell us about that legislation that you're introducing as it relates to making this more permanent so that if and when there's another Democrat in the Oval Office and changing around some of the appointments like Transportation Secretary, this would be codified in law and couldn't be changed by another Democratic Party leading the country.
Well, that's right. And that's why making these executive orders and new rules and regulations designed to protect the American people, that's why it's so important to make these part of the statute, part of the code, is the permanency of that. Because what happens is the Trump administration will issue this rule. Things will be great for three more years. You'll have a major crackdown on these illegal immigrants that are receiving the CDLs unnecessarily, inappropriately. So we crack down on that, and then you have a new administration come in, and you know, if it's a liberal administration, they'll reverse that policy. Where so if you can get these things put into law, it makes it much, much more difficult to reverse. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be reversed, with a change of mind to Congress and passing a new law. But getting a law passed is not the easiest thing, as we all know. It requires a majority in the House, and it also requires a supermajority in the Senate. You got to get 60 votes to end debate on these measures. I think, though, you're going to find that this bill is going to end up having pretty good bipartisan support. And I think we'll have a good shot at getting it both through the House and through the Senate, and certainly the president will sign it. Everywhere I go around the district, this is one of the issues people talk to me about, not necessarily CDLs and the egregious nature and contortions that the blue states are using to provide those. But the fact that the American people want to see the executive orders of the president and the good rules and regulations that make sense, they want to see them codified and put into law because they want that permanency. That's what this is about.
You talk about laws being a little tricky sometimes to get through. We are in the midst of a government shutdown as we get ever closer to November the 1st. It'll be a full month that the federal government will be shut down. What's the latest that you're hearing from Capitol Hill? Obviously, you guys in the House did your work 7 or so weeks ago, still continues to be held up in the Senate by Democrats. Is there any concept, any idea that this backlog is going to be dealt with anytime soon?
Well, I think the longest shutdown was in 2018, 2019. Donald Trump was president then during his first term. I think it went 34 days or 35 days. My sense is the Democrats want this to be the longest shutdown ever. It would be the entire federal government shutdown. It's not just a partial shutdown like it was in 2018 or 2019. At that point in time, I think we had defense approps already passed. There was no concern about military being paid or any of those functions that were under defense appropriations jurisdiction. And maybe Homeland Security was included in that, too, at that time. So you didn't have the worry about TSA agents, et cetera. But I think probably middle, late next week, this thing gets worked out. Once you get past day 22 of the shutdown, it starts to get pretty painful. And obviously, everybody's read about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Those funds are drying up and will not be available for that program starting in November, first part of November. And that affects a lot of people. And then, of course, you have all those essential workers, those that are classified as essential, your TSA agents, ICE agents, et cetera, who are working without pay. Now, they'll get their back pay. They'll be paid for all the work that they have done. And personally, I think they ought to be paid a little more, particularly those that are in the classification of essential and like our air traffic controllers and TSA agents. I think there should be a little extra pay for them given the serious nature of their duties and the high level responsibility that they have that really affects the lives of every American citizen that uses our airways or our roadways or any of the other jobs that are being carried out that are so critically important to public safety. So hopefully by the end of next week, we'll have something worked out. But this could have been avoided. All the Democrats had to do was to pass our clean CR. We passed it in the House. kept the government operating through November the 21st. And the Senate could have done that. And we could have been working on all these other issues that they're trying to tie to the CR, which really have no relation to the CR whatsoever. You know, Chuck Schumer, I think, summed it up best in terms of their thought process. You know, every day the government shut down, you know, he said that is a better day, you know, for the Democrats, a better day for us, as he called it. And we all know who us is. Us is the fortunes of the Democrat political party, which, by the way, has just completely gone off the deep end here in the last several years, and everybody knows it. So hopefully by the end of next week, and we'll get back to some sense of normalcy after that.
Folks may not like to hear this, but the reality is in government, Congressman Rausser, sometimes you have to compromise. Sometimes you don't get 100% of what you want. Sometimes you get 80. But as you just noted and has continually been the Republican talking point since this began, there is no policy. There's no MAGA agenda in this CR. Is there anything for Republicans to compromise on to meet the Democrats halfway? Or is this just a clean CR that Democrats just need to pass?
Well, it's a clean CR that Democrats need to pass. Now, I'm not saying that at the end of the day there might be you know, some deal that's struck where we pass a clean CR, for example, and have some agreement to and some side deal as it relates to healthcare or some other you know, measure that you know, truly is you know, an issue that needs to be addressed as we move forward. But there's no need in holding the federal government hostage and those who are on SNAP benefits or the single women with children who are in need of the Women, Infants, and Children's program, the WIC program, as it's referred to. Those are all important programs to those people. And really, it's it affects their everyday daily life. There's no reason to put the American public through this and hold an appropriations bill, hold a CR hostage, you know, for all these demands that aren't even related to the continuing resolution or an appropriations package. They're policy issues. Policy issues should be debated separately.
Yeah, that's the bottom. Then it's a lot of policy issues that already were litigated out, passed through the One Big Beautiful Bill that was signed in by the president in early July. One more question on the shutdown. You mentioned that this current CR that you guys in the House voted for 7 or so weeks ago only funds the government through November the 21st. Congressman Rausser, looking at the calendar, let's say something happened next week. We're back at square one again, another shutdown in just the matter of a couple of days.
Well, what will happen is, you know, when there's a final package, when there's a, you know, final agreement, the Dems finally decide that they're going to vote, there'll be a modification made there on the date. The deadline probably will go to towards the middle of January, if I had to guess. Could be right before Christmas, but given the unsavory nature of this experience, I don't think anybody's going to want to deal with this right before Christmas. So I suspect they'll have an end date of mid-January, have a CR, another CR through mid-January. So whatever the Senate passes, the House will certainly pass. And so the ball's truly in the Senate's court. And Senate Democrats, we only need three or four more. And we'll have the 60 votes we need to get this nightmare over.
Turning our attention to some local issues, Congressman Rausser, I don't know if you've had firsthand experience to tour Wrightsville Beach over the last couple of weeks. If not, you've probably seen some of the same photos on social media. The beach erosion, even though we've been fortunate, fingers crossed, we haven't dealt with any major landfalling storm in southeastern North Carolina this Atlantic hurricane season. The beach has just gotten absolutely battered. I mean, there's 4 or 5 foot drop-offs in Wrightsville and Carolina Beach. What can you do at the federal level to help with some of that?
Yeah, so I've seen that. I don't live too far from Wrightsville Beach myself, as many people know. And, you know, we've worked very hard over the years to make sure that our beaches have the sand that they need in order to protect from storms. This year has been a kind of unique in the sense that we've had a number of storms come our way, but they've never hit on shore. But those strong currents certainly have taken their toll on our beaches. And so, in fact, there's a significant amount of damage, probably the same amount of damage, and in some cases, maybe a little more damage than you would even have had the hurricanes come on shore. So anyhow, it's a little bit of a unique situation this year. So Riceville Beach, for example, and I've seen the damage there, and I've seen the damage Carolina and Curie Beach as well, as well as the other beaches too throughout the district. But bottom line is Riceville Beach, for those that are concerned about Riceville, and that's probably the beach I hear the most about. Perhaps that's because I live near the beach, which I don't know. But anyhow, I'm paying attention to all of them. But Riceville in particular, that's got a four-year beach renourishment cycle. They're in year two, which means under ordinary circumstances, you know, they wouldn't be renourished until a couple years, you know, later. Obviously, that's not going to suffice. And so we're working with the Army Corps of Engineers to address that need much, much sooner. Now, just so people are aware, and just by happenstance, Carolina Beach, their renourishment cycle comes up this year between November and March, this coming November through March of next year. So Carolina Beach is on schedule, and Curie Beach, that includes Curie Beach as well. Those two are on schedule to be renourished this season. So people are going to go down there to the Carolina Beach and Curie Beach and see that that's being renourished, and they're going to say, well, what happened to Riceville Beach? Well, it's just because they're on different cycles. This happens to be the year for renourishment for Carolina and Curie, which got delayed a year, by the way, but that's probably turned out to their benefit. But we're going to address all the beaches that need the appropriate help. And so everybody can rest assured of that.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing some more sand laid on those beaches. And of course, it is a huge vital part of the economy here in southeastern North Carolina, to the chagrin of locals, Congressman Rouser. A lot of folks traveling in during tourism season and spending their hard-earned money here in southeastern North Carolina. The government continues to be shut down, but you are still providing updates to individuals throughout the district. You've got a great newsletter that you produce. Tell folks where they can go and get signed up for that.
The website's the best way to sign up for that, rouser.house.gov, and they can put their email address in there and sign up for the newsletter. A lot of people like the newsletter. I hear comments about it everywhere I go. If I get on a plane or if I'm at a restaurant, I always have somebody telling me that they get the newsletter, and there's a surprising number of people that actually open and read that newsletter every week. So about 28,000 people open it and actually read it, so which is a pretty significant number. And so that's the best place to sign up for it, rouser.house.gov.
We appreciate the insight and the information this morning. Congressman David Rouser joins us on the Nick Craig Show.
Great to be with you.
Some interesting comments coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Appreciate the time from Congressman David Rouser. Why isn't the rest of the East Coast having as much erosion issues, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina? Yeah, so we've just gotten really unlucky we've gotten lucky in regards to not dealing with a major landfalling hurricane. So in that regard, we've been fortunate here in southeast, or really eastern North Carolina as a whole. However, there have been a bunch of these low pressure systems that have brought just treacherous amounts of rain and rough surf to the east coast of North Carolina, regardless of whether it's a major tropical storm or not. And it has just battered the beach. And really, I showed the picture during the interview with Congressman Rouser of what the beach over at Wrightsville looks like. I mean, you've got these just major drops due to some of these low pressure systems that have just in some cases been right off the North Carolina coast. We, of course, had a close call with a couple of hurricanes already this year, other just general low pressure systems hanging off the coast for a couple of days. And you've just got this wave action that is just absolutely battering the coast. The good news is for Carolina and Curie, that renourishment is going to take place. Wrightsville, the Army Corps will be able to do something at least temporarily before that full renourishment schedule coming up in a couple of years. And yeah, I joked with the congressman, to the chagrin of locals, folks, you know, I get it. It sucks that during the summer it takes forever to get to the beach and you can't find parking. But I mean, you talk about something that is a major portion of North Carolina's economy, especially here in the greater Wilmington area. It is an incredibly important part of the coastal economy here, and it's something that, you know, we've seen in years past when renourishment did not happen under the Biden administration due to changes in federal regulation, the impact that it had on the beach. and the impact that it had on tourism. It was significant. So you can sign up for Congressman David Rouser's emails. Those are good ones. Rouser.house.gov. That's Rouser.house.gov. And of course, always appreciate him making time to join us here on the Nick Craig Show. Quick reminder, coming up tomorrow night, we will be having our October Zoom hangout for those folks that support the show financially over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. I'll be sending out a reminder email on that today. Check your Patreon account if you are a member. If not, I'll be sending an email out. Take place 7 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll chat about the government shutdown, any other topics, news of the day, the week, all of that coming up for those folks that support the show financially. You can do so for as little as $5 or $10 a month. Look forward to hearing from everybody and chatting with everybody tomorrow night. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. That is where that conversation will take place. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. I want to thank the Law Group for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call 910-251-6088. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back here tomorrow morning for the Nick Craig Show.